I do want to say that Lane has been quite correct in all his dealings with me on this matter. I'm not accusing of incompetence on this, though others have suggested that there are more competent people. I think that he can serve a good function if he helps this group to find someone who really is homeless or formerly homeless to take that job. And I think that what I'd like to see this group do is essentially break away from the original mandate and press on with things like protests, press on with things like demands that there be real activity, put money into outreach to the churches, where the churches come together in sort of a civil rights type movement of the 50s, although this is easier to do in, you know, thousands of miles away in Mississippi than it is in your own hometown, that's for sure. The civil rights movement had lots of trouble when it went north because they ran into the entrenched bigotry of even the very institutions that had supported them in the South. So I guess what I'm saying here is I'm going to be at the meeting on Monday to see that. I'd also like to see this group unanimously pass ending the sleeping ban and forward it to City Council for immediate action, because this initiative doesn't have to get thousands and thousands of signatures if the City Council takes it up. The City Council can take it up, you know, if just two people bring it up as an ordinance change, and that is something that Crone and Sugar can do. I talked to Crone the other day, and of course he was, you know, backpedaling and fudging and didn't have too much clear to say, put it through a commission, get 3,000 signatures. I said, look, there were 3,000 signatures that were already gotten for a stronger initiative to make sleeping legal in some places in the city last year. Those signatures we can present to you. Why do you want people to go out and get 3,000 more signatures? I mean, you know that that's the sentiment of the city. You have to stand up, even if Catherine Byers finds it makes her Harvey West pals or her West Side pals nervous. You know, that just isn't reason enough to continue to make it unsafe for homeless people to sleep and criminal for homeless people to sleep or cover up with blankets at night. And of course, this is something that pretty elementary. It's a hate crime by the city. Ironically, the Sentinel today had stuff on hate crimes, hate groups find audience in cyberspace, and hate crimes this and hate crimes that. And on page 4, you find page 6 actually, Dan White has a little story about hate groups keep low profile locally, which isn't true because the police force is pretty high profile, and I would say they are one of the clearer hate groups. They're carrying those guns and badges around, and you find that if you're a merchant, you have much greater say than if you're an ordinary poor person. If you're a landlord, I suspect you have greater say than if you're a tenant. And, you know, if you are a person with a house, I am sure you have more to say than if you're a homeless person in various confrontations that come up. I've seen this in many cases in terms of where a homeless person tries to file a complaint or make a citizen's arrest, the cop isn't interested, you know. Whereas if a merchant wants to do so, the policeman is there, he's in, and you're in like Flynn. But I noticed one paragraph in here that I was really outraged by. I get outraged a lot these days. The statement was made that, let me see if I can find it on here. It has to do with the beating of homeless people. Now, as I say, there have been more than 20 such beatings where homeless people have been targeted for being homeless, in some cases by youth, skinhead youth, claiming they're police in black boots with pipes and chains, as when they attacked Mr. Barker, Joe Barker, in May or June it was, and perhaps it was April, and Sergeant Clark and Sergeant Baker and Officer Seeley all came down to the Homeless Services Center and promised that this was all going to work out and things were going to get better. And indeed, there have been, I have heard of less assaults. I heard of one assault 2 weeks ago, which I have not been able to confirm because the woman who told me about it was jailed. That was a woman named Patches, jailed as part of her squeegeeing activity at the New Leaf Market. I don't know if she was actually jailed for that. It may have been for such things as sleeping warrants, or who knows, maybe loitering in an area where drugs are used, some of those serious crimes we find. But what I'm looking for is this little sentence. The homeless don't get mentioned in this national brouhaha about hate crimes, which it's hit the papers, and David Silva's hate-free initiative zone, which, as I've described before, I regard as mostly fluff, but, you know, certainly it does no harm. But again, And it can do some good if we use it to publicize the real hate crimes against poor and homeless people, which institutionalized, I was saying, hate crime is the sleeping ban, which the Byers sleeping ban, which Mayor Byers passed back in March, a $54 go to sleep, get a $54 crime. Boy, I am having real trouble finding this one sentence. It's in here. Oh, yes. In another case, a Scotts Valley resident was seen distributing white supremacist flyers outside Temple Beth El in Aptos. The same man was later charged with the apparently random beating of a homeless man in Santa Cruz. Now, and they're quoting, Dan White is quoting Sergeant Clark in most of this article. Clark has refused to return any of my calls. I've repeatedly asked Sergeant Baker to have him get back to me, and he's declined to do so. I'm perhaps not his favorite person, but I certainly am an activist working with this issue. I write about it. I'm a journalist. He has no reason not to get back to me, and he doesn't. And what that means to me is that the whole process of investigating this thing is not going anywhere in particular, although there is one person charged, this guy they mentioned. Though I haven't heard of it being charged as a serious hate crime, where a man is attacked with pipes and chains in the dark at night, specifically because of his homeless status. That seems a clear hate crime to me, where you go after a person because of his group affiliation. And again, I'm not necessarily clear that we raise the penalties for a particular group affiliation, possibly because I don't, you know, I myself am of Jewish ancestry and Jewish background, but I was not around at the time when, you know, the people were my fellow Jews were being exterminated. So I don't have that personal sense of terror and anger and concern that perhaps many older than I or more closely involved than I do in terms of this of attacks on a group of people. But I definitely think that people who are homeless are getting it through a daily process of humiliation and abuse in terms of the legal system and in terms of how they're often treated. But also, I think that these specific crimes of violence that happen against them, and which the city tolerates, which the police department, you can say, well, you know, they haven't got enough evidence, this and that. But if another group of people were getting attacked in this way, and they were also in a position where it was criminal for them to sleep at night, there would be provision made so that would not be the case. As after the earthquake, homeless middle-class people were allowed to sleep outside their homes, whereas the formerly homeless people got arrested in front of the Civic Center Auditorium in 1989, 4 days after the earthquake, for sleeping there, even though the Civic Center shelter was full. I mean, we saw this so dramatically then, and that really hasn't changed significantly in spite of our wonderful new city council. I think I'm going to postpone the long and interesting, but long, Phil Baer interview. And let's hear a little bit right now from the Capitol Steps and Unzippin' My Doodah.
In my Oval Office study, it's the truth, it's factual, everything is satisfactual. I'm unzipping my doodah every day. Some cute intern could be headed my way. Plenty of fun times, people to meet. Hey, it's not cheating if I'm on my feet. Close the door and lock the deadbolt. 'Cause I have a new date. Chelsea has a cute new roommate. I'll zip up my doodah, 'cause I'm no slob. Hey, I'm the boss man, I love this job.
And that was Zipping My Doodah, or Unzipping My Doodah, with the Capitol Steps. And we're on the line with David Silva, one of the most active activists in the Santa Cruz area, who has something to say.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, David.
David's over here. It's a little sad for me, and too bad that you think that the Hate Free Initiative is a fluff piece. For those of us who have had friends murdered, just past year, and they've been, you know, violated and beaten, and for those homeless, and the homeless are included as an identified group, this does raise a consciousness for the city. As you know, in the Homeless Issues Task Force, I was calling not only for immediate repeal of the sleeping ban, but since we're having these beatings of the homeless, there should be something like a call by the city council. They should call for a community watch. The community should be concerned and be watching out for its homeless.
That's a great idea.
You know, so why isn't there a community watch alert going on? I don't think that's fluff either. I don't know what you consider fluff and what you don't, Robert, but, you know, I guess the things you aren't involved in are fluff and the things you are involved in aren't.
No, I don't know.
I found it very, very, very offensive
to
say that.
David,
I found it offensive for Dan White to completely...
Slow down.
To use that article with the way he referred to homeless people.
Let me respond as a random act of violence.
It's certainly not a random act of violence, and that needs to be corrected. We all need to call the Sentinel. We all need to call City Hall and say, you know, we need a community alert. You know, knock this off.
Well, I think that was an excellent idea you brought up, among a number of excellent ideas at the Homeless Issues Task Force last Wednesday, of a community watch. And I particularly like your plan, which I think is going to succeed, which is to have the new sleeping ban initiative, which you are almost single-handedly getting out there, passed on Monday at 5:30 on the second floor of the library, and invite supporters of that initiative to come down and insist that it be passed. I'm pretty sure
the task force will pass it. The thing is that they need to word it in such a way that the council takes immediate action.
Exactly.
I think.
Have you had any conversations with any of the council members that indicate that there might be one or two willing to carry this initiative?
No, I haven't. I haven't had any conversations on that. I was going to let it pass first and then have something to actually talk about.
Right, which actually will probably be happening tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, yeah.
You also have been faithfully... Again, I want to clarify. I'm not opposed at all to the hate free zone initiative. If it were anyone else doing it, I would be much more critical, because I know that you, through the way you're carrying a number of different initiatives and your history on this issue and your outspoken willingness.
Well, it does make you nervous when you start getting the support of the police department and the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
It always makes anyone nervous.
Well, just make sure
Gush
Dumbo doesn't support you. Then you'll be.
Well, I've been pretty seriously attacked by him.
Well, that's good. That'll get Neil Coonerty on your side there.
Yeah, I think Neil is for this.
Yeah, well, he should be. I mean,
actually, Neil let us put the sign in the hate-free weekend. It's coming up next weekend, folks.
Well, I hope he is. The question is, he probably also does not support ending the institutionalized hate crime of the sleeping ban, unfortunately. Although maybe you'll be able to win him over.
I think Neil did make overtures during the camping ordinance task force to a safe sleeping zone. I think you might remember that yourself right towards the end.
I remember.
When they thought they were losing, all of a sudden they were all ready for some kind of compromise.
Really? I never noticed that, but yeah. That would have been very positive if that had happened.
Yeah.
I know that you worked for 6 months after the sleeping ban initiative last year deadline, with Kennedy and Lane and, I guess, Karen Gillette.
Laura Tucker,
to try to get some kind of a compromise during the election in Sandy Brown. But
yeah, we were hoping that Kennedy was going to bring it forward to the council when they met back in session in September, and he managed to sort of forget it.
Yeah, right. He tends to forget. He's forgotten four different interviews on the radio or canceled out.
And, you know, and I'm willing to accept that from the liberals and so forth, but from our so-called... You know, reality, true, new progressives, our supposed reality progressives, we're not going to tolerate that kind of behavior. You know, Catherine wanted this to not be the first thing to happen with the new council, and she wanted it to be slow. Well, it took them six damn months to appoint this homeless issue task force, so I think we've waited long enough. We've been wanting this particular version, or close to this version, you know. Not only passed petition, but when we were out there December 8th, when they passed their resolution, that everybody had a right to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Now they need to stand by that resolution. It's time. The time has come. And I know they've got a very busy schedule, so they need to just get the matter out of the way.
For sure. You know, you've been involved with that, the SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network Housing Committee, and
yes.
Following their stuff, and you and I... They're
sending a letter to the city council demanding immediate repeal of the sleeping ban and creation of safety zones. That's one of the things we voted on last Thursday.
Very good. I wish that they'd been more high-profile during the Camping Ordinance Task Force, but I guess we...
Skip spoke pretty well for SCAN, I think, during
Skip
that
did, and Bernice fucked up big time. but that's just my view. I mean, I know the letter they sent was a piece of shit, but that was a sad thing.
Too many committees. The original letter was okay. Yeah. Too many committees.
Well, there's also been another issue that's been kind of making the rounds. I've talked about it a lot. I would have had it on the air today.
By the way, you do know that your telephone is giving a horrible buzz on the radio?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, that is the...
So, as long as I talk, your audience is being annoyed. So if you want me to listen...
That's good. But you see, you're worth annoying them for. Unfortunately,
okay.
The only way we can keep you on the line is to have that annoying buzz. So I just...
So if you want some How to Divert Hate Crimes training, come to Loudon Nelson next Saturday. If you want to participate in the big push for the Hate Free Zone initiative to get it on the ballot, and you know, because we've got so much yeses and so many people thinking this is so success, we don't have any money and we don't have hardly any volunteers. We need people to show up Sunday morning at 9:30 back porch of Loudon Nelson Center. Be there or be square.
This is next week we're talking about.
This coming weekend.
Now let me also ask you about the you got a few moments more? How are you fixed for time?
Sure.
The housing committee, when I visited it at the SCAN offices, was concerned about what was a big issue last fall in the election, the beach area situation for housing. A lot of us were concerned that Hispanic locals were going to be evicted under the pretext of affordable housing, and that this was being repeated with the Dolphin Lee apartment project. And then in a kind of a recent letter, SCAN seemed to be backing away from this and saying there are a number of possibilities.
Oh my God, how can you say they're backing away from it?
Well, I'm glad. I would like
to... Did you read the final letter?
Well, tell us about it.
Well, the final letter was like almost a page and a half of prefaces of, you know, you shall not evict, you shall only have complete, absolute guarantee of replacement housing, you shall only, you know, any kind of project there would have all these, you know, humane restrictions. And they were very, very clear. If, however, you are going to do some development, you need to do this and this and this. And then we listed the list of all the different ones that have been talked about, cooperative housing and... we listed Habitat for Humanity, as you looked into. Yes, we did list Mercy Housing as something that's on the top, but we said to look at them, but all of those have to meet those tests that we gave, that 1.5 page of very, very strict human, you know, human need requirements. So we thought by prefacing it that way, that then we would give it the context. And that was our intention out of the Housing Committee. The Steering Committee, before they sent it to the City Council, actually even made it even stricter. So you may have seen the very first draft, which was pretty sloppy.
No, I saw the last draft, and I agree with you. I guess what I'm saying is that backing away from what seemed to be, some sort of support for Dolphin Lee.
There was a nod at the general meeting back in February that there was this project, and everybody agreed that, you know, since, you know, after the victory of Beach Area Group, there should be something done. And so we sent it to committee. That's how this housing committee was created. I happen to be the chair of the housing committee.
Uh-huh.
That's how the housing committee was created, but it did not get the go pass that perhaps some people were expecting through SCAN. Quite the contrary, we managed to contextualize it.
Is there much chance that there'll be an action to acquire Canfield property or eminent domain it or attempt to purchase it or attempt to purchase and upgrade it rather than go after Dolphin Lee stuff? Realistically speaking, and the reason I ask you this, David, is because the only people who seemed to be organized were the Dolphin Lee and people. Andy Schifrin and Don Lane were there with a very specific plan, and it's true that the Bears came in with their Rex Court plan, which suggested actually confronting Canfield and saying, let's get his property instead of destroying existing housing, let's expand housing stock. The real, you know, the folks that had it together and had the plan on track seemed to me to be the Dolphin Lee Mercy Housing.
Well, you know, Mercy Housing has been in the business a long time. I mean, they know how to make proposals and presentations. And we had, the rest of us were like, I was focusing on rent control, another person was focusing on this and this and this and this. We managed to merge those things together so that we were able to, instead of the Dolphin Lee getting to committee, we ended up getting all the proposals to committee, and then we were able to prioritize.
So what's really going on behind the scenes? Do you have any sense?
I wish I knew. You know, let's face it. Charlie Canfield is no small opponent, and he's no great benefactor to this city. He's been a leech to this city for a long, long time, and his attitude and his manner is goes far right wing cowboy, shotgun toting, rancher. I mean, that's the kind of animal he is. We shouldn't expect anything from him, but it is a there's in a sense a corporation and a company. And we do have the right to eminent domain. What we don't have is we don't have the balls on the city council to to take the appropriate action. So, you know, we have to give them those balls a little kick here.
Even if we, even not eminent domaining, but just proposing purchases, you know.
Yeah. Well, sure. That's what eminent domain really is anyway. You know, you have to sell us the property.
Well, now, getting back to this, the third very important initiative that's making the rounds, one is the sleeping ban, a new sleeping ban initiative. The second is your hate crime initiative. And the third is
the most important of all,
the rent control initiative.
I don't want to say most important at all, but let's say the biggest
in
town.
Oh, I would say that it certainly more directly and immediately affects more people than those other two initiatives.
Yeah.
But the huge profiteering that's going on now. What's happening with SCAN? Have they decided to endorse rent control? What do you think?
Well, you know, SCAN doesn't have general membership meetings that often. When it comes to an actual initiative on the ballot, the steering committee has no power to do it. It will be in the newsletter as a, you know, the debate will be presented in the newsletter, and of course the newsletter will come out soon before the next general membership meeting. And I suspect that will be the, you know, the hot debate at SCAN. But I don't think it'll have trouble. I don't think it'll have trouble.
And when will that meeting be?
Huh?
When will that meeting be?
Gee, I wish my mind was working.
I don't know.
I'm not sure if it's October or early November.
What I told Bob LaMonaco, I talked to
City of Santa Cruz is also having a big housing confab, and one of their city council meetings completely devoted to public hearing.
What date is that?
I think it's the fifth time they meet, and they're meeting every single week when they come back from vacation. They're meeting every single week for about 8 weeks in a row, which they don't usually do, but this year they are.
Well, I know that I was scandalized at the consequences of their last meeting, where they sort of rammed through this stealth ratification of Daniel Alper as the seventh member of the Citizens Police Review Board. You want to talk a little bit about your sense on that, what that means?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it means that Cynthia Matthews made her nomination, and it was, you know, there's not much the council can do about it when it comes to the Citizens Police Review Board. It's not like they can, as a majority, fill that seat. Not when it comes to Citizens Police Review Board. With other commissions, they can do that. The Citizens Police Review Board was created by ballot, or structured that way when it was created, so that each member has its own actual representative that they, you know, in a sense, more control. Now, she said that she doesn't know what his politics are or any of this stuff and so forth like that, but we do know his, might say, his financial attitude and his background, and that's not really one that's been known to be very critical of police. I don't think that the corporate mind or corporate mentality is usually anti-police. If anything, they think of police as their servants to keep the people down. So I don't think it's an encouraging sign that he's on there. But what is encouraging is that the sucker is just a phony candidate. He's not going to be around anyway.
Well, the problem, it is true that he will not, he's going to be out of town for 2 months, and it'll take two more months.
Read his letter to the editor yesterday?
I think I heard about it, but what did he wrote about, he opposed to La Bahia, was that the, we're talking about, or was it something?
Yeah.
Actually, I tend to favor his position on that, and I did talk to him for about an hour and a half.
About five sentences of, like, you know, cursory, you know, needing to get his name out in public.
Oh, I see. Well, that's an interesting way of viewing it.
That's how I viewed it.
I mean, what concerns me, and I brought this up with Councilmember Crone, I happened to run into him the last couple of days and gave him a tongue lashing, as is my wont. You know, it seemed back in November, Crone and Sugar were standing even side by side with Steve Argue, talking about the need for stopping police abuse at the anniversary of the shooting of Happy John Dine by police officer Carey. And then, then a couple months later, four-member majority on City Council, Byers, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, rejected Bill Christie as the nominee of Cynthia Matthews. And then, you know, Matthews went into her tent and pouted for 6 months and came up suddenly with this guy that apparently was somebody that Hernandez ran into when he was doing a plumbing job. You know, and I got nothing against the guy personally. I really don't. I mean, he may end up being better than we think. But
never could tell Earl Warren surprises you,
you know,
right?
But the question is, sure, Earl Warren did surprise us as Chief Justice, but the question is, to me, has the real mentality of the City Council changed? Are they no longer really interested in police review? They were willing to stand up and say, Bill Christie, no. But now they're willing to let this unknown nomination just go zipping through. Now, while it's true, and you're quite correct, that the City Council can't appoint a member, if the member is not nominated by a member of the City Council. So you can't just do it by a 4-3
right.
majority. They could change the law by a 4-3 majority if they want to. If Matthews insists on obstructing the process for month after month.
Well, you know, Robert, I think that's really what we really need to start focusing on. We really need to realize that the Citizens Review Board is broke. Arnie Leff, I think, is doing a fine job at like pointing that out. I think that that we're heading, he's heading it in that direction where it just becomes more and more obvious that we have to make it a functioning independent body.
Yeah, I hear you there. Whoa! So you're gonna. I guess you'll be attending this homeless issues task force tomorrow.
I will be attending there with bells on.
You'll be carrying your pillows to give out to every third homeless person.
Yes, of course. I'm rich.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's.
Well, let's stop this buzzing for your show. I mean, if I was talking, I feel guilty because I know how horrible it is to listen to that buzz.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna have to kill the local engineer. Possibly, we'll have to pistol
whip
her.
Take that little plug, pull it out, and pull it back in. That's what I do when I have problems like that.
Well.
Talk to you later.
Hey, thank you.
Bill Clinton here. And you know something? I thought it mattered. I thought leadership mattered. But nothing matters compared to how women matter.
We'll be singing while you're ringing. We'll be singing.
My polls go down, but they go up again. You'll never run me out of town. My polls go down, but they go up again. You'll never run me out of town. My polls go down. They go up again, you'll never run me out of town. My polls go down, but they go up again, you'll never run me out of town.
Dissing the right away. Dissing the right away.
I think it needs to think, I think the stars are dink. I think they really stink, they want me in the clink. You vote for me, I will show you really good times. You give me cash, I will show you even better times.
Boy, naughty boy, naughty boy, naughty boy.
My pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town. My pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town. My pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town. My pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town.
Kissing the night away. Kissing the night away.
Jennifer, then there was Paula Jones, then there was what's her name, then there was oh my gosh, I got the babes who will show me really good times, I got the babes who can show me even better times.
Please lie with me, White House neighbor.
My pants go down, but they go up again, except when Hillary's around. My pants go down, but they go up again, except when Hillary's around. She runs this town.
Okay, well, it's August 22nd, I guess. Boy, it's moving right along. Like 21st today and 22nd tomorrow.
Now, the book trial won't be out probably till October.
On the line with us, we have Berkeley poet and actually U.S. poet, or we might say world poet, Julia Vinograd.
There,
and here, and apparently everywhere. Julia, you've written, are we at book 43 or is it 44 now?
I think it's 44, I'm not sure.
And your latest book is The Cutting Edge, but you've written some new stuff that's due to be coming out when you publish your soon-to-be-published book, right?
Yes, it'll be called Ask a Mask.
Ask a Mask.
Yeah.
And you're a resident poet in Berkeley. You've been struggling to pay the rent there for the last, what, three decades?
Yeah, that's about right, 30 years.
And there was one poem you particularly wanted to read, you said, that had to do with, you wrote it in the aftermath of the shooting of the children down in Los Angeles.
Yes. Yeah, I'll start out with that one.
Okay.
Well, I'm a Jew. A man on TV said he wants me dead. I've never seen him before. He shot children to set an example, just a sample. He wants others to kill more. Newsmen measure his hate, roll it thin, and test its weight. They're going to bake a pie, not for apples. Preheat the ovens. Don't cry.
No. Okay.
I'm going to put it in the new book. I had to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want some stuff that's more on Berkeley?
Sure, or stuff that you that your favorites. I know Berkeley. I was recently through Berkeley in front of KPFA the day after they dragged Bernstein out of the studio. We walked down to the freeway, and then we're stopped by a line of cops, and then we walked back. It was quite a scene, actually. I make it sound much more pedestrian than it was. We stopped at every intersection trying to get arrested in the sense of trying to make our...
No, it's all starting up again. Maybe I'll go on with the... continue with the restoration of the Telegraph History Mural.
Sounds good.
They just repainted it, and it's all the sort of political history, which the KPFA thing is a continuance of.
This is a huge mural at the corner of Haste and Telegraph on what was the old Forum building, and I guess I saw Ocean Newman, attorney for the people and also former Police Review Commission member, and I guess he's... Well, now he's an artist as well, right?
Oh, yes. He and his group painted it.
Uh-huh. Well, go ahead. Give us your latest thoughts on that.
Restoration of the Telegraph History Mural. Open my head and restore my memories and all their glory as you restored this mural. Bring all the colors back. Mario Savio is dead. Mario Savio can never die. There he is clutching a microphone on the cop car with the pillars of Sparrow Hall falling down around him and TVs landing like flying saucers. Until you fixed the mural, I was sorry he was dead. Take your crew of ladders and paint-spattered overalls into my head. I haven't forgotten, but I want the impatient, blazing hope that clenched my throat tight as a fist or a green bud. I don't want to just hope for the best. I'm marching for peace down the white line in the middle of the road, singing, dividing the world on either side, and the world ends in front of me with the waiting riot squad, and the sun trumpets above me brighter than I've ever seen it since. Lean your ladders against the sky and restore the sun. My back's in the mural. I've turned to watch what's happening and what's happening now. People's Park, and here we are. The sign says, everybody get a blister, and I've got a blister on my heart. I didn't notice the mural faded. I must have faded. I held that photo of James Rector's death in my hands, these hands. Restore my hands. Gospel protest songs wild enough to take heaven by storm, let alone earth. A greeting continued as jail bars twisted apart. The mural painted us to freedom, dancing in the upper right-hand corner. Will you give me a hand to the upper right-hand corner? Will you take my hand? Will you paint our hands together?
Of course, those who don't know this mural, it's a huge mural on the side of the building at the corner of the block where People's Park is and was raised 30 years ago, right across from the site of the Berkeley Inn where you lived, which has since been razed and arsoned and sitting in a blank. There's, of course, it's nothing there now except the area surrounded by fence. And your picture is there as well, blowing bubbles. Do you have that yellow hat on? I'm trying to remember.
Yes, black and yellow hat.
Black and yellow hat, yeah. And you're talking about that mural in this poem. You got some other ones for us?
Oh, sure. Let's see. Man with a shopping cart. I remember cloud castles in the air, top-heavy wishes that couldn't fall down, just blow away. This evening I saw a man go by talking to himself, pushing cloud castles in his shopping cart, his wishes, a pile as magnificently broken as the watchtowers and not a single thing of use. The wind had blown him away, apart, clutching at clouds, his shopping cart full, his shopping cart empty. I remember watching the cloud shapes and giving them haphazard names. Doesn't that cloud look like a giraffe with a neck blowing longer? Doesn't that one next to it look like a giant turtle? And doesn't that cloud on the edge of the sky bent over and pushing the horizon, doesn't that one look something like a man?
Good. Got another?
Yeah, I got another ballad, one for the Columbine High School killings.
Mm-hmm.
Schoolboy, what did you learn in school today? I learned to plant a potato in a jelly glass. I learned to plant a child in a long-legged glass. I learned to plant a bomb to blow up the class. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. Schoolboy, what will you do now? I'll take death to your wars, I'll make you proud, I'll kill a frightened foreign crowd, I'll graduate in a burning shroud, and that's what I'll do now. That's what I'll do now. Schoolboy, who brought this to pass? I see your face when I look in the glass. Your country sends gents chanting, keep off the grass. And who do you think teaches my class? Where I learned to lie under potatoes I plant. Where I learned to lie so still.
Sounds like a variation of the Tom Paxton song.
Yeah, except I've been told that before, but I don't know the song.
What did you do in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you do in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. That's a Paxton song.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Right, early 60s. We're listening to Julia Vinograd, actually, talking to her, listening to her, and hearing her poetry. Julia is in Berkeley, and these are poems we're privileged to hear from your forthcoming book, which again is to be called...
Ask a Mask.
Ask a Mask.
Yeah.
Hey, just, you got more for us. We're ready to hear them.
Okay, let me bounce around some. Check at the beginning of the month. My check just came. I'll buy the crown jewels and get that psychotic pigeon that keeps trying to fly through my window pane to build a nest in the royal crown. Speckled eggs on red velvet. I'll buy family jewels that don't have any families. I'll buy the jewel buried in a magical frog's skull, but I won't turn him into a handsome prince. My check just came. I'll go to a French restaurant and order frog legs and watch the waiter's legs and never have to wait because my check just came. Yes, I'll pay my debts, or I will be able to borrow at the end of this month that will never end, except it will, I know, and eventually bills, but not now. My check just came. Here's a fire hose to play with in the tub, along with your yellow rubber ducky. They had lots more. They had another one right next to it, and I filled it up with pennies, spring pennies on a fire. Pretty. I'll buy a moose head and make you hang your ties from the antlers. If you ever buy ties, you better not. I'll buy a politician for a fountain statue. He'll stand on the marble pedestal in the center, spouting, and water spouts will drown out his voice, and children will splash around him. My check just came. It's not very much. I'll buy us a box of winter strawberries. We'll pull down the blinds, roll strawberries and sugar left over from last month, and feed them to each other, eyes closed. A day peeling off the check. A night.
Nice, and I think one that a lot of us, those of us who still have checks coming, can sympathize with.
Yes.
What's next? Tell us if we're pushing you to read too much here, Julia.
Yeah, well, you can always edit out the ones you don't like.
No, I think we'll play them all. I like them.
Street time. Street teenagers thrown out of time like getting caught using expired bus transfers, their short blue hair and long moist kisses lost to the rearview mirror. The future left without them. Death is their summer vacation, but what they did on their summer vacation, they won't tell the class. The chalky blackboard looming in another world, the teacher whose false teeth grind like pebbles. By now, none of it happened. No future, no past. When the rain hurts them, smears Egyptian eye paint and makes them run for shelter as if they were human, street teenagers get skull and spider tattoos, which hurt much more, and let everyone admire how brave they are, how beautiful. The ugliest monster outshone by their glowing skin. How young, which teenagers despise with lies and fake IDs. No future, no past, no present. Big time.
Good.
Let's see. Watching a girl. She kept dropping everything and making a big pantomime joke out of picking it up, and her skirt rode up and back, so she pulled it sort of down and made a half-hearted effort to straighten the stocking crooked as a lawyer while another armful escapes, maybe laundry, no lipstick. I expected her tattoos to start tumbling off, tangling in scarves way too big for her short, shaggy hair. I expected her to keep shaking that precarious load till a big, bright pile of autumn leaves fell out of her bare arms and she jumped into the pile, squealing, dissolving into sparks.
Mm. Good. Again. Give us another one.
Oh, Lord, I don't know. I've got one on the year 2000.
Yeah, okay, let's do it, Y2K.
Yeah. The banks won't go smash at the year 2000 because of the Y2K computer bug. The banks will go smash at the year 2000 because people will take all their money out because they're scared of the Y2K bug, and you can't have a bank without money. We'll sleep on mattresses full of dollars while the cash register at the grocery can't make change without power and the clerk can't count. People are stocking up on batteries. Batteries for flashlights, alarm clocks, radios, dogs, cats, friends, and lovers. So many batteries that if the power doesn't go off, people surrounded by hundreds of little electric turds that look like they're laughing will grab a machete and cut the power lines. We'll have candlelight dinners of canned food from dented cans, bottled water, warm bottled beer, canned days, bottled nights, and we'll piss out a window like people in a schlock novel. And we'll have a gun in case someone else has a gun, because they might. Machines are only our mirrors. Numbers are fingerprints of time posted on the sky like wanted posters. The year 2000 is a treehouse with no way down as it gets dark. The computers will fly away on metal wings. Missiles all over the world will sing, "How do I love thee? Let me count the ways." But it won't be machines sobbing in the street, reaching blindly to hold or to hurt.
That's good. I like that.
Thanks. Well, maybe I should stop there. That's quite a chunk.
Okay. Well, that's great. Julia, if people want to get you your books, of course, they could check out some of the local bookshops in Berkeley and maybe even in...
But they could also write me. Give them my address.
Uh-huh. Well, let's get your address. Your address is 1630 University Avenue, number 34.
Berkeley.
Berkeley, 94703.
Yeah, and just send a check for $5 made out to me.
And you will send your latest book, The Cutting Edge?
Yes.
And you actually have some back stock, too, if folks want some of the older books?
Oh, yes, yes. $5 a book.
$5 a book. And if you have missed that address, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will be happy to give it to you more slowly and repeat it as many times as necessary. Julia Vinograd, one of the best poets in the country for my money.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. And... hey, I'm going to have to make sure I make copies of that book before I return it to you. I was able to borrow one of Julia's rare books, The Book of Jerusalem, and now I've got to get it back to her. I want to thank you, Julia, for giving me the...
Yeah, that one you could just send in the mail. If you want me to send copies of the tapes, they're $5 each. Send a check and your address, and I'll just mail the tapes, if you like.
Sure, I may do that, or I may look you up when I come through town just for the heck of it anyway.
Well, that'd be fun, too.
All right. Well, thank you, Julia.
Okay.
Yeah, that was me and Julia Vinograd, a Berkeley poet. Again, if you'd like a copy of her book, The Cutting Edge, give me a call at 423-HUFF for the exact address, and I will get to you, and you can send her a $5 check, and well worth the money. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. These are the closing minutes of our show. I'm going to try to sneak in this last item, which is... speech by the attorney of Dennis Rehm, man who's challenging the sleeping ban payment situation. We have a hard time getting any judges to say it's okay for poor people to sleep and it's unconstitutional to arrest them for sleeping. So what instead we've tried to do is use an old defense called the Flory Edwards Jacobs defense, used by activists from the early 90s, which essentially says that because this is a municipal code infraction, you cannot be jailed if you refuse to pay the fine or do the community service. The only thing they can do is civilly sue you. Peter Leeming is taking Dennis Rehm's case forward, and it's going to come back to court on Friday at 10 o'clock in Department 6 at Judge Danner's court, of all places. We spoke to attorney Peter Leeming and Dennis Rehm outside the court about a week and a half ago at the last hearing, and this is what happened.
Courtroom 6 with attorney Peter Leeming and his client Dennis Rehm, a number of supporters. Dennis, on Monday it'll be 11 months since you got your sleeping ticket in the vehicle.
On Friday it'll be 11 months. Uh-huh. And 8 court appearances and 2 warrants.
And why, Peter, you volunteered to help in this case?
That's right.
And you're not taking any money for this?
No, actually I'm charging Dennis minimum wage, which is what I do for three cases.
Outrageous for unheard of for an attorney to charge minimum.
$5.50 an hour, but don't let that word get out.
Hey, the L-E-E-M-I-N-G, leaning. Call immediately. So, Peter, this is your first appearance, second appearance for Danner, or on this case, or your first?
It's the second on this case.
And what happened at the first, and what happened here at the second?
Well, we set a motion that we're going to serve on the city attorney that argues the practice of issuing arrest warrants on the homeless camping tickets is illegal.
Well, why would that be? Certainly, if a homeless person violates the law and sleeps at night, he or she should be responsible for his crime. And if he doesn't pay his fine or do his community service, shouldn't he be taken to jail and treated like any other criminal?
Well, the laws that justify arrest are very specific. And while you can be arrested for not paying a traffic ticket, and there's some specific statutes on that, that doesn't apply to municipal ordinances such as the camping ticket that we have here. So, in fact, the remedy of the city is that they can't arrest you. They can obtain a civil judgment, and they can
just get your business.
Yeah, they can try and do that. I think the threat of intimidating people into paying money is more attractive to them than trying to get a civil judgment that they can't enforce.
And in fact, that is what they have been doing at least for the last 12 years when I've been observing the court process around sleeping ban and camping tickets. You said that this could have been disposed of differently by Judge Danner, that is to say, he could have simply quashed the warrant, but apparently chose not to take that course.
Well, I think he wants to have the city attorney involved in resolving this question, which is valid, and I certainly invite that input from him.
And the warrant, this is a warrant that's gone out to you twice, Danner, so that you could have been arrested, your vehicle impounded, you could have been taken to jail for, but apparently it was a bogus warrant. There's no basis for a warrant on a failure to obey a non-vehicular municipal code. Is that correct?
That's what I feel, and that's the court. According to what we've been able to find out, according to the statutes, that's the case.
And do you, with your professional expertise, do you agree with this lay opinion?
Well,